things at the fucking door, and let's dive down some rabbit holes. And let's dive down some rabbit holes. And let's dive down some rabbit holes.
Liberal advisory. Truthful content.
Wizard Illuminati.
A new world order.
Child. Sex.
Excuse me. Has anybody seen a white rabbit?
That was a joke about the world being flat, right?
Was it?
When we are successful, and we will be. We have a real chance at this new world order.
They sound crazy, so who cares? But it could totally 100% be true, because we know the government has lied about every single thing.
Welcome, fellow truthers and conspiracy junkies, to another episode of White Rabbit. I am your host, Catalyst Jones. And as it gets cold and windy outside, so does the political climate, and the conspiracies just keep coming true. Our batting average is at least 870,000 right now in the conspiracy world. We are just knocking them out of the park. And today we're going to jump into something a little bit crazy. I like to dive into the past as well, because that's where all the conspiracies come from. And today we have somebody that just wrote a brand new book, and I fucking wrote it down, forgot the name of it, Epic of Esau. And Doc Brown is here to talk about the crazy shit that goes along and what made him want to write this book. So let's get into this. Doc, welcome to the fucking show, brother.
Hey, man, thank you for having me. I love your work. I followed your stuff on Instagram and stuff for a while, your graphics and stuff. You could tell that you're kind of like me. You're obsessed with your craft. It shows in your work, man.
I appreciate that. Yes, it's one of those things where, like, so I have ADHD, and I like gravitate towards things, and I master it really fucking quick, and then I move on to the next. And so with podcasting, it's everything that I've ever been passionate about, from graphic design, video editing, audio production. So it's like kind of the coolest fucking thing for me, because it's like, shit, this is everything that I've already mastered. So I love it.
Same. Yeah, I become obsessive compulsive over stuff. I've not mastered it yet, but it's, you know, all the creative juices that you get from that, just from the thumbnails to the audio to the graphics and stuff. So I'm kind of self-teaching myself how to do all this stuff. But yeah, it's stuff that I really enjoy, all wrapped up in one. It's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, it's always, you're always going to be learning. I wouldn't say that I've mastered anything, because the tools are always changing and creativity is always changing from within a person. So there's never mastering a creative art form. But I will say that, like, when I went to school for graphic design, and when I was sitting there, I was thinking, like, why am I fucking sitting here? I know more about these things than the people trying to teach me. This is retarded. But creativity is something that's just within somebody, and there's certain sparks that will, the catalyst will bring it out of somebody, and it's not something that you can teach. You know, you can teach somebody how to use a paintbrush, how to hold it, and how to put it to the canvas, but you can't teach them how to paint a Picasso.
Yep. Agreed. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, 100%. So you were telling me a little bit about this book before we jumped on here, and I do want to get into it. But before we jump into the book, man, I like to ask people, you know, like, throughout our lives, we have multiple little tiny red pill moments, but there's usually just that one, oh, shit, everything is not what I thought it was moment. Do you remember what that moment was in your life, brother?
Yeah, it was 2012. You know, I grew up, I'm from the Bible Belt, if you can't tell by my dialect here. You know, I'm from East Tennessee, but grew up in church my whole life, and of course had my, you know, rebellious streak and all that stuff, just like everybody else. But 2012, I was just mindlessly scrolling on YouTube and social medias, and stumbled across this guy called Trey Smith from God in a Nutshell. And he was talking about angels coming down and breeding with the daughters of men and creating Nephilim giants. And angels and aliens and just all this kind of, you know, fantastical stuff that in these circles we run in that we find ourselves fascinated with and talking about so often. And I was like, this dude is just full of shit. I know the Bible well. I've grew up in church my whole life. This stuff ain't in there, bro. So I started pulling out my Bible and reading through some of this stuff, and I was like, oh, man, it's here. It's been here the whole time. And then he introduced me to Michael Heiser, Dr. Aaron Judkins, and Dr. Judd Burton, and all these guys in this circle that hold to this supernatural worldview. And it was like I was reading the Bible with a new set of eyes and like reading it for the first time. It was something that I thought I was so familiar with and knew so well, but I did not know it at all. And I was always a history buff. I loved history, and I always kind of gravitated toward conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So with this new set of glasses that I had, I just found myself connecting all kinds of dots with ancient history and conspiracy and cryptids and Bigfoot and just all this stuff. And it lit a fire, man, that to this day I've not been able to quench.
Isn't it interesting, you know, and Sam Tripley talks about this often, that the Bible is so much more interesting than what they teach us when we go to church in these organized religious buildings. And, you know, I kind of have my theory on why they don't teach us the cool shit in the Bible and why they've taken out the Book of Enoch and the cooler writings. You know, like in the Book of Enoch talks about a lot of what you're talking about with the Nephilim and the beasts of the fields and all kind of just the coolest fucking stories. And they've all been taken out. And the ones that haven't been taken out, it just kind of brushes over, you know, because it's not taken out completely of the Bible. It does talk about how the angels came down and took women for their own and created the Nephilim. But why do you think that the majority of it is taken out? And my theory is if people don't know their history and where they're coming from, then they can't prevent what is supposed to come.
Yeah, 100%. And even just like the Genesis 6 narrative, yeah, it's there, but it's like the theology and the teachings, they have just really whitewashed it. I knew of Genesis 6, but not in that context and with that viewpoint. I was always taught that the sons of God were the righteous line of Seth, and the daughters of men was the pretty but wicked spirited line of Cain, that those two branches of the family tree got together and that they bred spiritually wicked people. And these were the rulers and kings and authorities on earth that were wicked. They were spiritually descended from this union of the sons of God with the daughters of men. And once I got to searching this stuff out and seeing it for what it was and what they actually believed, you know, it was angelic beings coming down. And then it made so much more sense to me. And one of my friends made a comment when we first started podcasting. It was the first show that I'd ever done. It was the Dig Bible podcast. And my buddy Chad, he started off with us for a few months and ended up starting a business and had to step away. But he said, I'll never forget it. He said, yeah, that Sethite view, you know. He said, it sounds good, but then when you get to thinking about it, he said, kissing cousins don't make 30-footers, bro.
No, so, they don't.
Yeah, that kind of stuck.
So why do you think that they hide this from us, though? Why do you think that they miss intentionally? It is intentional. Is it the Vatican that took these things out? Because everybody says, well, the Vatican took these things out, and I could see that. You know, and we can go back to as far as the Knights Templar trying to separate and hide certain things once they started their banking organization, pretty much. You think that's when it was decided to start hiding what our past really is?
Honestly, I think that it started as just kind of like a not being forward thinking of us reading these texts thousands of years later, because Genesis 6, you know, you just get that little blurb. And us reading it today, we're like, whoa, that's a pretty big deal. I want some more context on that. But back then when they were writing it, they were just like, we're not going to beat a dead horse. Everybody knows about the angelic beings coming down and breeding with the daughters of men, because we have this strong oral tradition. Everybody knows. We don't have to go into detail about that. And we also have the Book of Enoch that goes into great detail of this event. So it was like the writers of the time was like, everybody reading this, that what I'm writing here is going to know about Genesis 6. So I don't have to cover that ground. That book's already been written. That story's already been told. I don't have to theoretically beat a dead horse.
Right. And we see how that happens. And, you know, I can kind of put this in an analogy, because we deal with this shit at work, and it's certain people know certain things that are not in the SOPs. And if you don't know these things, then what you're trying to accomplish is not going to fucking work. But these people have this knowledge from being there so long, they don't think that they have to write it because it's just instilled in everybody. But yet then when you get somebody new that comes in and you just hand them the book, they're not going to know what the fuck to do. Mm-hmm. And so it gets lost. It gets lost just by thinking that that's already instilled in people.
Yeah. And that's the thing with even Esau. You get little blurb about him and then they're like, move on. But there's so much to the story that's in other books and other legends and lore. And the people just writing it at the time just are not thinking forward enough about the new people coming in and reading this, kind of being in the dark. But when you deal with, you know, the Council of Nicaea, you know, they got together and got all these different scrolls and books and formed them together to make what we call, you know, the 66 book canon. I think it was just one of those things. It was like, our religion is now being established. We're trying to bring all the people of Rome under the umbrella of Christianity, but all these other religions, they all have books, but we don't have a book. We don't have a line in the sand and showing you the boundaries, what we believe, what we don't believe, and like a standard. So they were just worried about the organization of an organized religion. So they were like, okay, long as we have the Torah, which is the history, it shows our creation, our rebellion and fall. And then when you get to the New Testament, that is the redemption, you know, and the coming of Christ and our salvation. Long as we have the highlights and main points, that's kind of what we're concerned about. But when you dig in and you see this seed war of Genesis 3:15, and a lot of people in conspiracy circles talk about the blue bloods and the dragon court, and these are the rulers and principalities ruling the earth today, that's part of their lineage. So, of course, they want to try to keep that stuff suppressed and hidden. So it kind of morphed. It started off as like an accident. Like, oh, well, you just ain't going to touch that. Everybody knows. But then as it started curving and knowledge started increasing, it was like, okay, we're going to keep this kind of shrouded in mystery as long as we can and not expose ourselves and our agenda.
Right. And then they took it so far as to, you can look at older pictures and older newspaper clippings and stuff like that, and you'll see giants all over the place. And you can go on my Instagram if you want. And I have videos of this shit for sure. But the Smithsonian started taking these things and hiding them away and locking them away. And, you know, and my theory is that's where we get these so-called dinosaurs from. But, They hide this stuff from us, but yet they are the ones that are in charge, I feel, today and ruling things. And I'm just going to throw a joke out there, man. Have you seen fucking Barron Trump?
Yeah.
That kid is a fucking Nephilim, man. He's like 8'9".
Yeah, he's a big kid. And then you got all those, the adventures of Barron Trump, where, you know, it was written back in what, like the 30s or something?
Yeah, the Ingersoll Lockwood.
He's a type. Yeah, he's a time traveler and goes back in time, and his dad becomes the president, and he's the last president, and an attempt blows up Congress, and it's pretty wild how that stuff's kind of playing out, and especially when you look in, and that in the book, the uncle was named Don. He was a, you know, like a big big brain guy from MIT or whatever, and then turns out, they had a Don that was an uncle MIT, big smart guy, and he was the one called in by the FBI to examine the paperwork and documents of Nikola Tesla when he died.
Yep, and so, then and he's the one that was there to confiscate all of that stuff, right? Yeah, a lot of people say that Donnie has the capabilities of time travel. So we'll see. You know, that's a fun one to jump into. I don't necessarily think that that's true, but there's a lot of similarities. We don't believe in it's too early for me. We don't believe in I keep wanting to say consequences.
Coincidences.
Thank you, sir. And there's just too many in that book to overlook. And, you know, everywhere from it says in the book that he lives in Trump Castle. Well, he lives in the Trump Towers, you know, and I believe even the address is like dead on. And so I remember 3 years ago, probably, when there was a website that came out and I was heavy into the Q stuff. And a buddy of mine back then, he was like, bro, you got to check this fucking book out. And yeah, it's definitely one of those head scratchers for sure. So you get super interested in all of this stuff, as we all do. When I first heard about Nephilim as a child, I was like, I have to know more of this. And my mom didn't know about the Book of Enoch. So she's like, well, that's really all there is. So, And so you took it a step further and you started looking into it. And so I cut you off right around you were talking about the Blue Bloods basically still being in charge today, or that's a theory that's going around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing is me writing this book, I was never a Bigfoot enthusiast. But I mean, I knew, you know, the 30,000 foot view that he was this hairy ape man of the woods that a lot of people and throughout different cultures and throughout time have bumped into and reported. And you get over into Britain and Europe and all these other places, and they call it the wild man or the wood woes. And here in America, you had those loggers that found the big tracks and got a print of it out in California, and the name Bigfoot was born, and the Patterson-Gimlin films and all that kind of stuff. You know, I kind of just knew the general knowledge, but as far as like someone that read all the literature, went to the Bigfoot conferences, and watched all the YouTube videos and podcasts of encounters and all that stuff, that was not me. But I had friends that were. And it actually all this whole journey started with like a catty little joke out of nowhere. Just we were talking about, you know, Bigfoot with Trey Smith from God in a Nutshell. We had him on the show and he said, yeah, you guys are from East Tennessee. That's Bigfoot country. Maybe I should come down there and we go Bigfoot hunting and record it one day. I was like, yeah, man, come on down. And just like out of nowhere, Genesis 25:25 popped into my head. And I was like, dude, Esau sounds just like a Sasquatch. You know, for those not familiar, that verse, it says, the first one came out red, covered in hair from head to toe, like a hairy cloak. And so I said to Trey, I was like, well, what about Esau? You think Esau could have been the first Bigfoot seed? Or the first Bigfoot documented? And he kind of laughed and he's like, ah, you might be onto something. He was definitely a hairy dude. And it kind of just branched off from there. And where I have a podcast, I started a second one called The Prometheus Lens. And that's the same thing, but I dive into ancient lost civilizations and history and the Bible and all that kind of stuff, just like with a Christian supernatural Christian worldview. And I had Gary Wayne on to talk about the Epic of Gilgamesh like the next week. And so I was reading through that, studying that, and then I bump into this guy called Enkidu. Once again, another with our modern vernacular, Bigfoot. He's covered in hair from head to toe, bumps into Gilgamesh. They have this epic battle. And I'm like, dude, this sounds a lot like this guy Esau. And just the little breadcrumb trails just kept leading me. And then I was studying for another show, and I was actually reading into the book of Jasher. And this is another one of those extra biblical books. And in there it says that Esau was out into the field, and that Nimrod was searching for him. And it said that Nimrod had built up resentment and jealousy and hatred for Esau.
What the shiza is up, my fellow conspiracy junkies? Seriously, though, have you guys checked out charismictruestore.com yet? If you haven't, stop what you're doing right now and go check it out, because I am telling you guys right now, if you're looking for truther gear, this is the place that you want to be. I like the store so much that I made this little jingle for it. So, hey, yo, DJ Don't Exist, play that track I like. Biatch! Let's go!
Welcome to the truth. Welcome to the light. Flat Earth revelations. Everything's alright. Clothes that fit your vibe. Medallions shining bright. Stand for what you believe. Join the truth tonight. Charisma Truth Store. Join us, bring a friend. Realize the simplicity beyond the world's complexity. T-shirts and accessories, truth in every piece. Step into the story, claim your cosmic peace. Charisma Truth Store. Join us, bring a friend. Realize the simplicity beyond the world's complexity. T-shirts and accessories, truth in every piece. Step into the story, claim your cosmic peace. Charisma Truth Store.
Esau all of his days. And both of their, you know, their claims to fame was that they were the mighty hunters,
right?
And so it was like they were trying to show who the real mighty man was, and Nimrod wanted to take him out. So, and the way it words it is like he's kind of like Gaston, you know, in the Beauty and the Beast.
Yes,
this
yes.
Hunter trying to take out this epic Bigfoot creature. And it says,
oh shit,
that Esau,
I wonder if they threw that in there on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, they might have. And then it says that Esau sees them, and it's him and two other Gibborim, you know, and that means mighty. And that's the same word in the Hebrew texts used to describe the Nephilim giants. And so it says that he hides himself, and they're looking for him, trying to hunt him. And it says that Esau springs out and cuts off Nimrod's head with a sword, and then fights the other two Gibborim to the death and kills them all. But then it throws in, it says that he takes the time to steal Nimrod's garments. And then it says, these are the garments that made Nimrod a mighty man. And how, and through these garments is how he ruled over all the nations. And then when I kept reading, it says that then that's when he comes home and you have the trading of the birthright. That's in the book of Genesis. And that was another just wow moment, because when you read that, that was another one of those stories in the Bible that just never made any sense to me. Because I don't think it says,
a wow moment as you're talking about this, because I haven't looked at it through this Prometheus lens. I haven't looked at it through, I haven't connected these dots. Has anybody written anything or made videos about this yet? Or are you like the pioneer of putting two and two together here?
Yep, as far as I know, nobody has connected all these dots. I'm the first one to talk about it and put it together in a book and talking about it on podcasts and stuff.
And what's crazy, fucking blown away right now, bro. So please keep going.
Dude, this whole story is just wild, because like when you read in Genesis, you know, like we talked about, you just get little blurbs and you're missing so much context. Well, in Genesis, it just says that one day, Esau comes in from the field, and it says he comes in from the field exhausted, and that his brother Jacob is cooking red lentil stew, and he asks for some of the stew, and that Jacob just says, yeah, I'll give you some stew, but trade me your birthright. And Esau is said that he was just like, yeah, sure. What use is a birthright to me when I'm dead? Take it. And then it shows like some urgency in Jacob's voice. He's like, no, do it now. Swear to me now that you will do this thing. And he says, yes, take it. You know, what use is this birthright to me when I'm dead? I'm starving, you know, do the deal. And to me, when I read that, I was like, that makes absolutely no sense, because with the modern context, it's like your father is Donald Trump and you are the eldest son. You are set to inherit the business, the millions of dollars and the keys to the kingdom. And you come home after trading stocks all day or dealing in real estate, working with your dad, and you see your brother eating a bag of Doritos. And you're like, hey, man, I'm starving. Give me some of those Doritos. And he's like, yeah, sure. Just sign over the company.
Yeah, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, you would laugh him out of the room.
So why was he saying it's no use to me when I'm dead, though? Was he already in the sense like maybe he was just dead in his own mind? Like, you know how people are just walk around and they're dead inside? And they just feel dead to the world. Do you think that that's maybe what he meant? Or...
No,
well,
with
also,
that,
also I mean, shit gets translated through different languages as well. So,
yeah, and you know, like in church, they just made it out to like Esau was just this really carnal man that he just thought about the now and the pleasures of the flesh.
Okay, that and would make sense then.
And he let his gut lead him; that he was just hungry and he didn't care about the birthright. He just wanted to eat now, and that's all he was worried about.
Right, but you still like don't give up millions of dollars, because I don't give a fuck how hungry you are. You know that you're going to get some food eventually in the morning or some shit, right? It's not like he was on his deathbed and needed like a drop of water and a breadcrumb in order to survive.
Yeah, but the thing was, is he was. And that's why it makes a lot more sense. Because when you read the book of Jasher, he was out in the field and Nimrod and those other two giants were hunting him down. And he fights these guys to the death. And he comes home with these garments that he stole from Nimrod. And it says in the book of Jasher that he hid the garments in his house and then went to Jacob's tent. And then that's where Genesis picks up. So, yeah, he was exhausted from the field, because he just fought not one, not two, but three giants and killed the king. Probably sustained some life-threatening injuries, was on the run from killing the king, and was desperate. So basically he was, you know, it's kind of like allegorically for the food, it was like, give me sustenance.
Yes. Okay.
Sew up my wounds and hide me. And he's like, yeah, I'll trade me the birthright, because he knew how desperate he was. And he's like, what use is a birthright to me when I'm dead? Take it. I'm bleeding out. You know, the king's men are looking for me.
I got you. I totally misunderstood that. Okay, now, thank you for explaining that to my lightning brain. Yeah, I'm going to die, so what the fuck is a birthright? Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I was like, dude, I need to go through all these other extra texts and just see what else is missing, because that was missing from Genesis, and that tied in perfectly and answered all the ambiguous questions associated with that story. So I was like, so what else am I going to find? I have to, you know, my obsessive compulsive. I was like, I have to know the rest of this story. And so as I got to looking and I come to that part, I was like, what's so special about these garments?
Yeah,
and I wanted when to you do. Keep, yeah, when you keep reading, it says that like this was the birthright. This was part of the birthright, and it was passed down the lineage to the eldest son. And it shows that that these were the garments given to Adam and Eve in the garden. If you remember, at the fall, when they discover they're naked, they first, it says, they sew fig leaves together to hide their nakedness or cover their nakedness. But it says then God gives them a garment to cover their nakedness before he, you know, kicks them out of the garden. Well, according to the book of Jasher, that garment he stole from Nimrod were the supernatural garments from the garden of God.
Wow.
And it was a supernatural relic that was passed down to the lineages, and it follows it. You know, it goes to Adam, to Seth, and on down the line to Noah, to Methuselah, and then to Noah. And then it says that Noah had the garments on the boat and carried it through the flood. And it says that in Ham's going out, Ham stole the garments and then gave them to Cush. And it says that Cush hid them. And it was Nimrod was the son of his old age, and whom he loved exceedingly. And it said at the coming of age, when Nimrod turned 20 years old, Cush gave Nimrod the garments. And it says that once he put on these garments, he became a Gibborim, a mighty man. And that's another tie-in that answers for Genesis, because a lot of people speculate, because it doesn't say Nimrod was born a Gibborim. It says that he became a Gibborim. And so this book of Jasher tells you that through these supernatural garments, when he turned 20 years old and put them on, that is how he became a Gibborim. And the ancient legends and lore of the Jews, Louis Ginsberg has a 9-volume set called Legends of the Jews. And he just went through and collected all of their ancient myths and lore and legends and compiled them all. And in there, it talks about those garments. And it says that these were supernaturally charged, and that whoever wore them, all the beasts and birds and animals of the field would bow to the wearer of these garments, and it bestowed power and authority to rule over all of the nations. It was a symbol of kingship and priesthood. It showed that, you know, you were the head, and all the dominion of earth was given unto the wearer.
Was he wearing these during the battle?
And that's what when he killed Nimrod, that's the garments that Esau stole.
Right, right. I'm just curious, was Nimrod wearing them, or did he kill him and then go grab them from, like, wherever he was holding them, type of a thing? Yeah. Like, was he able to defeat this guy, like, while he was wearing basically the powers of God?
It just says that he removed the garments from him. So either he was
wearing them,
or maybe, you know, had them in a pouch, right, or something with him. But it just says that he removed them from Nimrod.
Is there anything in there that would make you think that he himself was given some sort of a power in order to defeat Nimrod?
Yeah, because think about it. I mean, if, you know, and a lot of people that's not familiar, you know, it says that at his birth that he was born covered in hair. He was born red, covered in hair from head to toe like a hairy cloak. And so, I mean, he's like a Sasquatch. So imagine an 8 foot, you know, possibly tall, red haired Sasquatch and the strength that they're reported to have. And he's wielding a sword and has a bow and has intelligence of a hunter. This dude would be, you know, a bad mamma jamma, because he killed, you know, three giants. And when you go on through there, it talks about his birth and his conception. It says that when Rebecca was pregnant, that the angel of the Lord came to her and said, two peoples, two nations are in your womb, and they struggle together within the womb. It said, one shall be stronger than the other, but the younger shall rule over the older. And so that was completely opposite. You know, the eldest is the one that ruled. So Esau was the one they were talking about that was going to be the eldest and be stronger than his brother. And the birth, I talk about it in the book, is pointing back to Genesis 3:15 and this seed war that L.A. Marzulli always talks about, because it says that at their birth, not only did he come out first and was red, covered in hair from head to toe, it says that his brother Jacob was clinging to the heel of Esau.
Oh, so he was huge.
And when you go to Genesis and the cursing of the garden before they're kicked out, God tells the woman that he is going to put enmity between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. So it says plainly the serpent's going to have a seed, and they're going to be at enmity with one another. They're going to war against each other. And then it says in that prophecy, some people call it the dragon slayer prophecy, but it says that the woman's seed will bruise the head of the serpent's seed, but the serpent's seed will bruise the heel. So, and I postulate in the book that Esau was of serpent seed. And it's almost like Satan, because he's a perverter. He twists things upside down. So I postulate the question in the book. I said, if Esau was of a serpent seed, Satan would be worried to death about this prophecy that was given. So would he not reach into that womb and turn them around to where his seed came out first, and his seed's foot would be pushing, literally bruising the head of the chosen seed, Jacob, and Jacob would be holding the heel and bruising the heel? And that's why the angel of the Lord had to come to her and warn her, you know, that the younger shall rule over the older.
Bro, I'm blown away right now. This is crazy. So do you give credit to the theory that people have put out there that that the forbidden fruit was actually Satan putting his seed inside of Eve?
I do.
And then she showed Adam when he came back, and so she had twins, one of Adam and one of Satan.
Yes, sir. And it's not till the last year that I have come to this. And I tell people, I was guilty of something that I chastised people for. You know, even on my show, I talk about, you know, hey, don't take my word for it. Listen to what I got to say, but then go search yourself and see if I missed something or if I got it wrong. Don't rely on other people's interpretations on stuff, because we can get stuff wrong. And you might have a different viewpoint or perspective or revelation that I don't. And like Dr. Michael Heiser and some of these guys that I looked up to and highly respected, they laughed at this serpent seed doctrine and theory and said it was bunk and it wasn't worth looking into. So I never did. I took their word for it.
And, oh.
And I actually had a conversation with a woman. Her name was Dr. Joy Pugh. And she came on the show and she started talking about the serpent seed. And I'm not going to lie. At first, I was like, oh, God, here we go. You know,
right.
I'm going to go down a wacky road here, man. But I kept my mind open. I left my preconceived notions and dogma and teachings and doctrine at the door and sat there with a blank slate, open mind, and heard her out, give her an honest listen. And she completely blew my mind and changed my mind. And she says in there, she said, number one, they partake of this tree. And she said, and growing up, I was always told about this apple. She said, once I got to reading the story for myself, she said, there is no apple. She said, I said to myself, where's the apple? And she said, in church, you know, in proper society, they don't want to talk about sex, so they allegorize stuff. And she said, and you have a serpent, which in Hebrew, that is the word nakash. And the Hebrew language is just like English. One word can have multiple meanings. Yeah, that word can mean nakash, but it can also mean the shining one, or the one who practices divination. So with the context of that passage, you know, what makes more sense? A talking snake deceived Adam and Eve and caused the fall of humanity? Or a divine being on God's holy mountain rebelled against God and caused the fall of humanity? To me, the latter makes a lot more sense.
Of course.
But with the serpent imagery, you know, serpents can be phallic imagery. Trees can be phallic imagery. And it says that they partake of this tree. And then what happens? They immediately cover their private parts, their right. sexual organs.
And why, as if you got walked in on, you know, like it. If you were like the teenagers having sex and the parents came in and you were like, oh, fuck your dad, you know, like cover yourself up type of a thing. Like, yeah. Why would they cover themselves up if they were eating an apple?
Exactly. And she used the illustration. She said, my mother was very strict. She said, we wasn't allowed to have sweets before dinner. And she said, we kept a cookie jar above the refrigerator. And she said, we were all in the kitchen. Mother was cooking, and she had to leave the kitchen and go into the living room for something. And me and my sister thought that we could sneak up there and steal a cookie and eat it before she came back in. And she said, long story short, we got caught. And she said, when she walked in, she said, you know what was the first thing that we did? She said, we covered our mouth. She said, because that's where the sin was. That's where the transgression was. That's what we wanted to hide. That was what we were ashamed of.
Yep.
She said, so once they partake of this tree, they all of a sudden cover their private parts, their sexual organs. And then she said, this was Old Testament, the Mosaic Law. She said, it was eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And she said, all of the cursings in the Bible run directly parallel with the sin, and usually you get the opposite of what you're trying to achieve. She said, so what, let's look at the cursings. She said, number one,
humanity is drunk. What the fuck is going on? They poison in the mind so we can't see right from wrong. We can't define a woman, and now women have dongs. They strip away our rights, and these people cheer them on. This is modern warfare, a kind we've never seen. It's a war against man taking place upon a screen. It's a war to imprison you and take away your soul. Corrupt all men, but we say, fuck no! Had enough of the lies, had enough of deceit. Went to red pill threats and take this fight to the street. Silence without violence.
blue warriors made a movement. They were on the same vibe. It wasn't just about shirts, it was a fight to survive. No more silence, hell no, no more playing it safe. If we don't speak up right now, then who's gonna speak in our place? They want a one world order, wanna spit in their face. Cause I'm not a little bitch and I'll never be the slave. So we speak in designs and we speak with our threads. Not afraid to speak our minds, took some pills, yeah they read. Had enough of the lies, had enough of deceit. Went to Red Pill Threats to take this fight to the street. RedPillThreats.com. Don't be afraid to be loud. Draw the lions from the depths. Stand out in the crowd. RedPillThreats.com. We're not afraid to be bold. We break the silence without violence and never do what we're told. They called us crazy, but we weren't wrong. We stay standing ground when the sheep go along. Truth in every stitch, a message you can feel. RedPillThreats.com. Go grab it for a deal. RedPillThreats.com. Don't be afraid to be. Silence is compliance. Promo code RABBIT. Trust in God, not in science. Make your voice heard. Stand and join the fight. RedPillThreats.com. Stand up for what is right. RedPillThreats.com. Silence is compliance. Promo code RABBIT. Trust in God, not in science. Make your voice heard. Stand and join the fight. RedPillThreats.com. Stand up for what is right.
Eve was cursed with painful menstrual cycles and bleeding. She was cursed with painful childbirth. And childbearing and carrying the burden and the pains of this child. She said, then her seed is cursed. She said, then not only that, the serpent's seed is cursed. She said, every single action, every single cursing, all has to do with sex. And I was, like I said, going into this conversation, I was like, now this stuff's laughable, you know?
Right. But this is crazy to me because in my head, like the ultimate sin would be like murder, rape, and pedophilia. Like sex doesn't even come into it because we've made it so easily accessible and we live in this hookup culture to where you don't even think about it. You know, it's like having multiple partners before you get married is normal. And what's not normal is saving yourself before marriage nowadays. So it's just, it's crazy to me that that is the biggest sin and the original sin.
Hmm. Yeah. And then when you go like into the etymology of the names, you know, when your mother became pregnant with you, she was extremely excited. And all mothers, the picking the name is important. You know, they probably have 20 to 30 different names that they're debating on and weeding out, talking it over with their husband to figure out the name is important. It's not something that just like, ah, we'll just call him this. No, I mean, it involves a lot of thought and time. Well, Cain's name means acquired. What loving mother names their child acquired?
Wow, that's fucked up, you know, the bastard child.
Yes, exactly. That's the point. And then Abel's name means breath. And why is that? Because if you remember, when God created Adam, he was a lifeless body. until God breathed the breath of life into him. So Abel was named after his father because he was in the image of his father. Cain was not. And the people that want to throw away the serpent seed theory, you know, the people that hold to the serpent seed theory, they have, you know, all these receipts, all of these good theological points and passages. And I mean, I've just kind of skimmed the surface here. I mean, there's so much more.
Right.
And all the people that want to throw it away, all they have, brother, is one verse. Out of the entire biblical text, of all the extra biblical texts, the rabbinic legends and lores, everything, they have one verse. And that verse says, after they were kicked out, it says that Adam knew his wife, and she bore Cain. And then again bore Abel. So they say, well, serpent seed is dead. It says right there that Adam knew his wife and she bore Cain. Case closed. And I'm like, no, if the serpent laid with her and then germinated a seed, and then afterwards Adam knew his wife, he just germinated another seed and they birthed twins. And then that same, like the next verse, it says that when Cain was born, she makes this proclamation. And she says, I have acquired this man through the help of the Lord. And then when Abel is born, he doesn't get no special proclamation. It just says, and out came Abel. And when I was reading that the Lord is the divine name, you know, the tetragrammaton, the yod hey vav hey, that name wasn't given until Exodus. It was given to Moses first. And Moses is said to have written Genesis. But one thing that puzzled me was reading through Genesis. Up until this point, every single time that God is referred to, they don't use the divine name. They say Elohim. And God created the heavens and the earth. The Elohim created the heavens and the earth. And that word can be plural or singular. So the context of how it's used is important. But in the plural sense, it's talking about the divine council. And so it can talk about, you know, a group of supernatural entities. Satan is an Elohim. He's not the Elohim. He is a Elohim. The Archangel Michael, Gabriel, all these characters you hear about are all Elohim. Not the Elohim, though. So I'm like, if Moses wrote this entire book, why would he use Elohim? And then all of a sudden change it to the divine name. So to me, I was like, if I'm writing a book and talking about somebody and I refer to them in this certain term, I'm going to use that term throughout the Bible or the whole book. I'm not just going to suddenly change what I'm calling this person.
Right.
So to me, I was like, this signals to me that Moses wasn't the only writer. And when we see the name change, that shows where Moses picked up, because Moses was the only one at that time that knew the divine name. So when I got to research and I found, you know, hundreds of years ago, scholars had noticed this and studied it and searched it out. And they come to the conclusion that Moses was going off of 2 to 3 different source texts, that the creation had already been written down. And where we see this divine name is where Moses picks up and takes off. So like out of respect, he left, you know, the original writings of creation was all using the term Elohim. So out of respect, he kept it the same. But where he picked up, that's where you see this divine name inserted. So I postulate the question in the book. I'm like, Elohim was used of God and other gods, angelic beings, until this point, and all of a sudden it changed. Could it be that the original writings said, I have acquired Cain through the help of the Elohim originally. Yeah, and what possibly. Elohim, the Nakash?
Who would Moses have picked up the writings from, though? Would it have been Adam?
Who knows? Honestly, that's just one of those things. It's just the scholars come up with, like I said, I mean, they've not discovered these source texts.
Right. It would make sense, though, the way that you broke it down, like you're not going to be telling the story of a person and change the name halfway through.
Exactly. And that's what they come to. They's like either there was another written account of the creation that he was going off of, or it was a well-established like oral tradition and story that was verbally told, you know, in the context of Elohim for God's name. And he just kept it the same, like out of, you know, respect for the story. So, but it was just cool just going through this and studying this.
Yeah.
And then when I started looking at some of the legends and lore, like when you go to Ezekiel 28, that's a verse that where they're giving a condemnation to the king of Tyre. But halfway through, the wording changes. And it's no longer talking to this king. It's clearly talking to a divine being. And in there it says, you were in the Garden of Eden. You were made perfect in all of your ways. And it says, every precious stone was your covering. Tardis, topaz, beryl, onyx, jasper. And it names all these stones. And in the Masoretic text, it lists 9. But when you go to the Septuagint, they list 12. And it says, you know, that these garments were beautiful and had gold inlays and all these, you know, shiny, pretty things all over it. And it says that you profaned your sanctuaries and you were cast from the mountain of God as a profane thing. And, you know, and the scholarship is unanimous that this is talking about Satan. And when I read that, I was like, this sounds like the priestly ephod, because they wore this ephod with this breastplate that had 12 stones. And those stones are multicolored, and it's got all these little gold inlays and pins and tassels. It's really ornate. And then it goes on to say that he profaned his sanctuaries. I was like, it's painting Satan in a priestly role. He's wearing the priestly garments. It says that he has a sanctuary and that he defiled it and then was cast out of the mountain of God. And so then I was like, what if at the serpent's fall, that before he was the king and priest of creation and had a sanctuary and wore this priestly ephod, and that the skins, or the, you know, the English translation, the skins, but the coverings given to Adam and Eve when they left the garden was the coverings of the Nakash, the priestly ephod. And when I got to looking through like the rabbinic traditions, they all say that Adam was the first king and priest of earth. And all rabbis trace their beginnings and lineages to Adam, saying that he was the first king and priest, so he had these garments. So it's, you know, not out of the question to say that at the Nakash, the serpent's fall, his position was taken away from him, his garments taken and given to humanity. And this was symbolically God giving the dominion of earth to mankind. And that's what these garments are.
Bro, mind blown. And that's why demons, and they hate us. They hate everything about us, because we've taken what was promised to them in the beginning. And
And it makes perfect sense, because this was a status symbol, something that the Nakash wore with pride. And he tried to trick a being that was less than him, lower than him. And it ended up in his downfall, and his position was taken away and given to the ones he tried to trick and destroy. That alone would make Satan hate you.
Oh, definitely. And not only that, like, why would he want to corrupt so many people too? Not only to hurt God, but also, you know, just out of spite. Like, that one motherfucker, that one asshole got away from me. I'm going to take it out on everybody. But, yep. You know, and I've thought about this a lot too, because I have held on to the idea that there was twins, and one came from Satan and one came from Adam. And, you know, that just makes me wonder how these obviously elites, they're very, very in tuned with bloodlines, and they pay attention to that shit, and they want to keep them as pure as possible. But, you know, us mutts down here walking around in normal world, we probably are muddled with both.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yeah, so that, and so that, that also makes me wonder, is there anybody that is pure? You know, it says that we all have sin in us, and the only perfect man was Jesus. And that would make a lot of sense, because we all come from a half evil seed.
Yeah. And that also answers the question of why was it so important for the biblical writers to keep up with these genealogies? This one begot this one begot that one, and Cain was removed from that lineage. You see a branching off in two trees, or two branches of the same tree, and they traced them and tracked them. Because if there was not a serpent seed line, if there is not a seed war, what is the point and purpose of keeping up with all of that? And they, God protected that line and kept it pure for the coming Messiah, Jesus Christ. And people talk about, like, Enoch. You know, Enoch was the seventh from Adam. Technically, he wasn't. The only reason he is because Cain was moved out of that line. And when you have Jesus talking to the Pharisees at one point, and some of the people that want to, you know, laugh at the serpent seed theory use this too. And they say, when Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, he says, you know, you are a pit of vipers. He said, you are of your father, the devil, who was a murderer from the beginning. He's talking about Cain.
Cain, yeah, for sure.
And so they say, oh, well, is Satan just going around screwing everybody, and all those people were literal serpent seeds? I'm like, no, that was a theological argument saying they were spiritually doing the will of the Nakash. But if you keep reading that context, a lot of people like to cherry pick little things, but it's like, if you read the full thing and get the full picture in context, the very next line is telling. Because the Pharisees respond with, we wasn't born of fornication. We have but one father, Yahweh. They're talking about Cain, who was born in fornication and had multiple fathers. We were not born of fornication. We have but one father, Yahweh.
Let me ask you a question. Why would somebody today that knows the Bible and other texts inside and out not be able to say Yahweh? Like, if I was having this conversation with somebody and they kept saying begins with a Y and ends with an H instead of saying the name, why in the fuck would that be? I'm just curious, because I had a guest on that was doing that, and somebody was like, yo, man, they're probably a demon and they can't physically say it.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do know, like, as far as, like, the Jewish thought, they held the name in such high reverence. They thought that, you know, their lips were not even clean enough to utter the name. And so they wouldn't say it. It was sacred. And that's why in your Bible, if you look, every time you have the Lord in all caps, they have inserted that, because in the original text is the Tetragrammaton, the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. But they say out of reverence and respect, they substituted it with the Lord instead. It might be one of those things, because there's some people that are like uber strict on the Torah laws and follow the Torah and the ways of the Jews. So maybe some people kind of take that standpoint that they think it's just so sacred that they can't say it.
His standpoint is that Jesus was a master occultist that performed a ritual and buried the heart of a lion in the city streets in order to gain followers for eternity. So I don't think it was out of respect.
No, that's just a really delusional person, it sounds like.
Or just readings that I'm not privy to, you know, because he did say he started out as a, well, he started out in Catholicism and then heavy into Christianity, which, I mean, we could say Catholics are Christian. And now he's where I just said he is. So,
yeah. Okay. And a lot of people, too, they get wrapped up and lost into like a lot of the Gnostic writings and teachings, and that's where you get a lot of stuff that's similar to that, that Christ wasn't the Son of God. He was a man just like us, but received a Christ consciousness, and that we all can do that because we all, God is within us. He's not some external thing, and that Catholicism has lied to you and tricked you and enslaved you to the system, that God is really inside of you. And just like Buddha and Muhammad and all these other people that achieved enlightenment and done God-like things, they found the God within themselves and got this God consciousness. And they even talk about, they theorize that the lost years of Jesus, he went to India and become an ascended master and came back and done all this stuff. And there's lots of occulty, witchy, new agey type stuff embedded into that. And they call themselves Gnostics. And it's just like a, to them, it's like a, just a branch off of Christianity. But in fact, I mean, it's got a Christian coat, but that's it. The rest of it is the complete inversion of the Christian thought.
Yeah, it would appear that they're worshiping the man in a different way, you know? And I don't know how to feel about that, because it is fun to think about that, you know, like, oh, we can become gods ourselves. And there is a passage, and I'm horrible at naming exact scriptures, but, and maybe I'm wrong, but does he not say that you too can achieve this?
Well, what he says is that everybody, his apostles were marveling, you know, at the works he was doing.
Oh, and then he tells them, ended up doing his works too.
Yeah, he said, marvel not.
Yo, yo, conspiracy junkies, you like garlic? Then get ready for the flavor explosion. That's flavors of the forest.
Let's go.
Chef Nelson's in the kitchen, got the garlic on lock. Freeze-dried magic, watch some red pills drop. From a campfire chat to a taste so real. Bigfoot breath, nah, it's the real deal. No more fake powders, just raw garlic dust. Sprinkle it on pizza, it's a flavor you can trust. They went wild for it, said put it in a jar. Now it's flavors of the forest. We're going hard. Flavorsforest.com, you know we bring the fire. So fresh, other brands should retire. 25% off with promo code RABBIT. You better grab it, don't you miss it, gotta have it. FlavorsForest.com, taste the forest vibe. Garlic so bold, bring your taste buds alive. 25% off with promo code RABBIT. Get the garlic magic, you won't regret it, grab it. Matt and Nelson, they started with a dream. Flavor so fresh, call it Garlic Dream Team. From the restaurant kitchen to your backyard grill. Flavors of the forest, even with your pill. Wood-fired pizza, eggs at the dawn. This garlic's got your back, you know you're not wrong. Get the jar, pop the top, and taste the seed. Raw garlic dust is the best you've ever seen. FlavorsForest.com, you know we bring the fire. Garlic so fresh, other brands should retire. 25% off with promo code RABBIT. You gotta have it. FlavorsForest.com, taste the forest vibe. Garlic so bold, bring your taste buds alive. 25% off with promo code RABBIT. Get the garlic magic, you won't regret it, grab it. From a campfire joke to a garlic revolution, flavors of the forest is the perfect solution. Bigfoot breath, that flavor we serve. This raw garlic magic is my motherfucking word. So grab your jar, order yours right now. Flavors of the forest make the mother chefs bow. Garlic that's raw and it's all for you. 25% off code RABBIT, that's the move. FlavorsForest.com, you know
we bring the fire. Garlic so fresh, other brands call me sire. 25% off our promo code RABBIT. You better grab it, don't you miss it, gotta have it. Flavorforce.com, taste the forest vibe. Garlic so bold, bring your taste alive. 25% off with promo code RABBIT. Get the garlic magic, you won't regret it, grab it. Flavors of the forest, it's not just garlic. It's a flavor journey, you're gonna love it. Promo code RABBIT, get yours now. Flavors of the forest, make your taste buds wow. Flavorforce.com, winter flavor is no conspiracy. Boom.
He said that once I leave and the helper comes, he's talking about the Holy Spirit, he said, you will do greater things than I. So, and then you see the apostles in scripture casting out demons and performing miracles and doing these things too. But that's what he said the key point was, is once the helper comes, once the Holy Spirit comes into your life. And it does. It sounds kind of similar to what the Gnostics are saying, but I mean that's what Satan likes to do, in my opinion. He likes to give you 9 truths to give you that one perverted lie, because that one is all he needs. You know what I mean?
Yes, every good psyop has a bunch of truths to make it believable.
Yeah,
100%. So we keep going with the bloodlines, and how do we get essentially Bigfoot?
Well, see, that's what I was saying was, when Esau come out like that, that he was clearly different. And if we let the text say what it says, I mean, if we saw this guy out in the woods today, we would say, hey, this is a Bigfoot. And once you follow the narrative, and I go really deep into the genealogy and the family line, because once he trades his birthright to Jacob, it's kind of like, he had his fingers crossed behind his back. It's like, yeah, I'll tell you what you want to hear, but if I live through this, I'm not giving you the birthright. And when Isaac, his father, is dying, he tells Esau, hey, I'm dying. I want a taste of your game one more time. Go out, go on a hunt, kill me a wild beast, prepare me a good meal like you always do, and I will bestow the blessing upon you. And that's another thing too, was Esau was the mighty hunter. He wouldn't have been starving. He could have easily went out and killed a lion and had lion steak if he wanted it. Why would the mighty hunter, who's an expert hunter and cooker, be starving to death and begging for a lentil stew? No, that don't make sense. But he leaves and goes to go on this hunt. Well, Rebecca is standing by the tent and overhears the conversation. And then she tells Jacob, she says, go out into the field, kill a young goat and bring it to me, and I will prepare a delicious meal for your father. You go in and pretend to be Esau and steal the blessing, because Isaac was blind. And Jacob, his first response, he says, but mother, I'm a smooth man. He will feel of me and see that I am deceiving him, and he will bestow a curse upon me instead of a blessing. And she says, just do as I say, and if there is a cursing, allow it to fall on my head. Just do as I say. So Jacob goes out, he kills a goat, brings it in. The mother prepares the meat, makes this grand meal. And then before he goes in, it says she takes the goat skin and wraps it around him.
Oh, shit.
Like a blanket. So some people want to say, oh, well, when Esau come out and said he was covered in hair, that was kind of hyperbole. They were just exaggerating a little. He just had a good thick beard and some hairy arms as he got older. No, he was literally covered in hair from head to toe like a hairy cloak, so much so that they had to wrap their brother in a goat's fur to deceive their blind father. And if you've ever, been around goats, they smell bad. They got a putrid smell. Their coats are very thick and matted and oily and coarse.
Yes, very coarse.
And it says that once she does this, but then she adds the cherry on top. It says, and a lot of people miss it, but if you have this perspective and this lens of this stuff we've been talking about today, you catch it. But it says that once she wraps him in this goat's fur, then she goes to the tent of Esau and takes his special garment and dresses Jacob in a special garment and then sends him into the tent. And when he goes in, Isaac says, I hear the voice of my younger son, Jacob, but I feel my son Esau. And then he says, but you smell of the field, my son. You must be Esau. And you hear about these phantom putrid smells associated with Bigfoot.
Yes, you do.
So I picked up on that. And it says that he eats the meal. He bestows the blessing and the birthright on Jacob. And he leaves. Shortly after he leaves, Esau returns and says, here, father, arise and eat the meat of my game. And he says, I've already ate of your game and gave you your blessing. He said, no, you didn't, father. And then they realized the fix was in. And it says that Esau become angry, so angry that he started to cry. And asked his father, well, do you have another blessing for me, father? I'm the eldest. Do I get nothing? And Jacob, the supplanter, gets away with everything? And he was like, what's done is done, my son. I've already given the blessing and basically, sorry, you're shit out of luck. And it says that he becomes so angry, he vows to kill his brother. And Rebecca overhears and warns Jacob and tells him to leave, to go to Haran, the land of her kinsmen, and hide there until his brother's anger subsides. And what's really interesting is, like, when I got into, like I was talking about Ginsberg and his Legends of the Jews, it says that when this happens, that Esau becomes angry and threatens to kill Jacob. But he says, I will not kill him with sword nor bow. He said, I will bite his neck and drain him of his blood. I will suck his blood dry and I will bite his neck until he is dead.
Interesting.
Very savage and very vampiristic.
Vampirist.
And then this is when Esau goes into absolute full rebellion. He takes three wives. Two of them are Canaanites, which they were sworn not to do. They were a cursed lineage. And when thanks to people like Gary Wayne, who has really deep dived these genealogies, I found out that the brides that he took were from known giant clans. So he married into giant clans, possibly marrying giantesses.
Right.
And bred with them.
And he was already big himself, right?
Yes. He was already huge and hairy, and then married into these Nephilim giant clans and started breeding with them. And then his third wife, he went to Ishmael. And Ishmael was his father Isaac's older brother. And just like Esau, Ishmael was the eldest born son and was screwed out of his birthright and kicked out of the family. So Abraham, Isaac's father, and mother Sarah were barren. They couldn't conceive. So Sarah, out of fear, gives him her handmaiden, Hagar. And when you read through Genesis, you find out that it's like a peace treaty or an alliance. The Pharaoh of Egypt gave them his daughter, Hagar, as a servant. So she was an Egyptian princess.
Oh, shit.
She had the royal blood. And Abraham slept with her and conceived Isaac. I'm sorry, not Isaac, but Ishmael. And then later, God blesses Sarah's womb, and she conceives Isaac. And Sarah becomes jealous over Hagar, and knowing that Ishmael was the eldest son and would receive the blessings and the birthright, and tells Abraham, they got to go. My son is the chosen seed. He's going to get the blessing and the birthright. And Ishmael and Hagar have to go. So they kick them out of the family, expel them. So when Esau gets screwed over by his birthright and younger brother, he goes to somebody that's going to sympathize with him. And you can imagine the hatred that was brewed from that union.
Oh, for sure.
And the genealogies, when you trace those, from the union of Esau, which was the Edomites, which were the enemies to God's people, first ones to attack them when they come out of Egypt, and said that the Edomites stood by and let the Babylonians enter Jerusalem and burn it to the ground. And it said that the Edomites stood and watched and clapped and applauded as the Jews were chained and dragged into captivity into Babylon. And so you had those peoples, and then you had the Ishmaelites. So when they bred together, they formed all of the Muslim nations and people groups that utterly hate God's chosen people and want them exterminated and wiped off the face of the earth. This is the seed war, and you see it playing out today in the news. This whole Israel constantly at war, two people groups laying claim to this one piece of land, neither one of them wanting to give. That's because this other people group is from the line of Esau, and they feel they were screwed out of their birthright and they want it back.
So what do you think about Trump coming in and taking their ball away so they can't play anymore?
And you might have to give me some more context on that.
Oh, so he, Trump said that we're taking over the Gaza Strip and claiming it as American territory so that they'll stop fighting over it. And he's, you didn't hear about this?
Well, see, honestly, I used to be like religiously involved with the news. And once you had the last election screw job, I believe that the presidency was totally ripped away from Donald Trump and it was a total steal.
Yes.
I was so mad I couldn't even see straight. And I was like, you know what? I know how this movie ends. The woman's tied on the train tracks and the train's coming. She's going to get splattered. And I don't need a play-by-play. So I turned off the news, quit watching it. And where I've not been watching the news or keeping up with it for like the past 4 years, it's kind of hard for me to get back in the habit of watching it again. So the only kind of news I get anymore is just maybe Instagram scrolling or Facebook scrolling and come across something. I'm kind of in the dark.
Well, good. You should never, nobody should ever watch the news. It's propaganda from the gate. You know, ever since Obama had his way with the Smith-Muntz Act, they've been able to legally feed us propaganda down our fucking throats. So yeah, nobody should ever watch the news. But yeah, so I keep up on all that shit because kind of have to with my show and other shows that I do with other people. And yeah, so Trump said, you guys can't play with this ball anymore. I'm taking it. And so he said that he's going to take over. We're taking over the Gaza Strip and he is going to rebuild it and give it back to the people. We'll see what happens there. But very interesting things happening. And I have a feeling that these people that are playing the strings and pulling the puppet strings behind the scenes are pushing us towards a fabricated Armageddon. I think that they want it to happen so bad that the one that we're going to get is fabricated. I just That's my opinion on it. And it could be so bad that it brings in the real one, but aren't we supposed to be under slave control for like 1,000 years, like under a one world government anyway?
Yeah, like according to the book of Revelation, you know, you have the, well, they call it Satan's little season. But that's one thing that I love reading the Bible and know quite a bit, you know, about stuff and like researching it. But most of mine's kind of been like stuck in the Old Testament and the ancient history stuff. I used to really be into Revelation, but as I got older, I just started becoming fascinated with history and stuff. So like my, my timeline and remembrance of all the stuff in Revelation's kind of hazy. But I think that's I think Christ is supposed to come back and reign, and then Satan has his 1,000-year reign, and then Christ comes back and wipes them out and destroys them. Because I know some people talk about, they think that we are in Satan's little season now,
right?
And I'm like, yeah, well, I don't see Christ sitting on the throne and ruling and heaven being on earth yet. So I'm still waiting for that part.
Okay. All right. So I'm curious, what became of this bloodline? Obviously we're kind of saying that they were the first Bigfoot sightings. And then now we have, if we're able to tie these in together, we kind of have the lineage. We can go back and we have the history of how it started. But now we have, you know, we have Yetis, we have the Sasquatches here. I don't know if Dogman plays into any of this at all. So how did it, do you have a timeline of how they started branching off and just kind of being all over the flat plain that we live on?
No, I just kind of laid out that general history and how it started. But then I do talk about how we see remnants of it, because like in Europe you have the Woodwos, the wild man, and all these stories and feral people, you know, and that's how you kind of get to there. And of course, like with any race or any animal, you have types and you have kinds. So, you know, like you were saying, the Yeti and all these other different kind of variants, but it's still it's just a branch off of this same kind.
Right.
And then you go to like Sardinia, you have the Mathones. And during the winter solstice, if you like look that up, it's wild. They, and you've probably seen videos of it, but like these people during the winter solstice cover themselves in black goat's fur and wear these hand-carved wooden masks and strap all kinds of various size bells on their back, and they dance through the street and they ring these bells. And then there's these guys dressed in red that come behind them with whips and chase them off, and they whip the women and grab the women and seize the women. And I was like, dude, this is like,
yeah, you know,
Esau, Nephilim, giants, and how the fallen angels seized the women and had their way with them. And the people of that country, they say that they don't even remember where this comes from.
No way, really?
That stems back all the way to like archaic times. So they just kept the tradition alive. And during this time too, the children that are coming of age is like a birthright or a coming of age, kind of like a bar mitzvah or whatever with the Jewish people, or the sweet 16 that we have today. They have this ceremony where they light this huge bonfire, and the kids, to prove their bravery, have to pass through the fire. And I think it's more symbolism of the Canaanites, these Nephilim giants, sacrificing their children to Molech and passing their children through the fire. And these hairy, quote-unquote, men dancing through the streets. And then they have what they call the tombs of the giants. And they buried these giants, and then they constructed this like temple complex or tomb complex around them. And from an aerial view, it's a bull with horns.
Oh, shit.
In the Bible, you talk about the bulls of Bashan. You know, and these kids, to prove their bravery, once again, they pass through the fire, but then they...
What the fuck is up, you sexy conspiracy junkies? Did you know that you get a discount on Organite? Well, you fucking do now. So do yourself a favor and head on over to organ-ite.com and get 15% off of that shit that the government has been trying to keep from you. Once again, that's Oregon, like the state-ite.com, and enter promo code RABBIT at checkout to get that discount. What are you waiting for? Did you know people have been killed trying to get this technology out to the public? Yeah. So quit being a bitch and head on over to Oregon-ite.com and get your energy up. And since I have your attention, how about giving White Rabbit a 5-star to keep this show in the algorithms so that Catalyst is able to keep bringing you these absolute bangers, bangers, bang, 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 bangers. All right, now let's get back to the fucking show.
Have to go into this bullhead tomb and spend the night. And it's not only to prove their bravery, but to ask the dead ancestors, the spirit of the giants, the mighty warriors, to embody them. And so it even goes back to the Vikings. When you look at the berserkers were known just to be wild men, crazy men, possessed men, that they would just wildly charge into battle, get stabbed many times, get their arms and limbs cut off, and still just mindlessly charge, you know, and attack. It's because they would do these necromantic ancestor worship rituals and sacrifice humans and drink the blood, and they would ask the dead warrior spirits of their ancestors to embody them. And that's how they become so wild and crazy and with superhuman strength and abilities.
Fucking Hollywood does that shit now.
Yeah, but unbeknownst to them, they are inviting the spirits of these Nephilim giants.
Oh, they know it. I mean, you hear Beyonce talk about how she gets overtaken before she goes on stage and shit, and they even have names for them. A lot of them have the same fucking name. It's a playoff of Rain Man or Raymond or Raymond for some reason. It's Eminem. And Roman, what's her name? Nicki Minaj talks about how she has the thing that comes inside of her's name is Roman. And so they fucking do this shit still to this day.
And you find remnants of it in the Bible that's calling back to these Canaanite people and stuff, because while Esau intermarried into these giant clans, it says in there that through his lineage is birthed this guy named Amalek. And Amalek was known, he was famous as this fearless Nephilim giant warrior king. He was like on the status of Og. And when you research, you find that he birthed an entire clan called the Amalekites after his name. And in Hebrew, that name means the blood lickers.
Oh, shit.
And it goes back to Esau talking about biting the neck of his brother and draining his blood until he's dead. And this was the group, the Amalekites. They were the first ones to attack God's people when they come out of the land of Egypt and was in their wilderness wanderings. And it says they picked them off like ghosts. It was like the first type of like guerrilla warfare as the Jewish people were going through and marching through the wilderness. It said these Amalekites would pick off the people in the back. They would take out the young and the old and pick them off. They said like ghosts, that just all of a sudden people just started disappearing. They couldn't find them. No trace of them. Didn't see them coming or going. And then finally, after they picked apart at them for so long, that they finally challenged them and went head to head in battle with them. And that's the famous story that you hear about Moses having to raise his staff into the air and only through supernatural power were they able to defeat this clan of giants. And it says that when his arms would grow tired and he would drop his staff, that the Amalekites would start winning again. And when you start looking through the legends of the Jews and some of these Midrashes and Targums and stuff of the Jews, you find that the Amalekites were sorcerers. And it says that's why God told them, when they went into the Holy Land, to kill every man, woman, and child, and animal, not to even spare the animals, because they were known sorcerers and shapeshifters, and that they would shapeshift into animals to avoid capture or death. And when you get into the wilderness wanderings, you get all these instructions. God tells his people, do not seek sorcerers or necromancers. Do not drink the blood. Do not pass your children through the fire. And it warns, no longer will you sacrifice to hairy goat demons who are not gods. And then it talks about desolate towns and cities in Isaiah. And it says there, the wild men dance. So you go back to the Mathones, covered in hair, dancing through the streets. And I think that God's people, while in their wilderness wanderings, were having encounters with these Amalekites who were sorcerers, who were drinking blood, doing human sacrifice, passing their children through the fires of Molech, practicing necromancy and sorcery, and they were imitating them. And they were sacrificing to these hairy goat demons. And remember, if you got this hairy quote-unquote man, Sasquatch Esau, breeding with giants, you have a high likelihood of throwing some strange pups.
And
is why during this battle, Moses had to raise that staff, because it was more than just a battle. Moses, in my opinion, was doing sorcery-type warfare against the high priest of the Amalekites. And only through the supernatural aid of God were they able even to beat the Amalekites. So when you get into modern day, you know, you get all this woo. You get, you know, the mind speak and sometimes orb spottings and things like that. You know, I postulate that according to the book of Enoch, it says that these Nephilim were hybrids. They were neither from heaven nor earth. So when they died, their bodies remained to torment mankind, and they were called demons. So I just kind of postulate, I'm like, you know, could these orbs and craft be the conveyance of these fallen angels?
I believe so. And you know, the crafts, I believe, is a multiple.
And they're checking on their offspring, you know what I mean? Because if you were a Nephilim and you died, your spirit remained here on earth, and you chose to manifest and torment mankind, would you not want to pick a familiar form?
100%. Brother, you came, you crushed. Can you tell everybody where they can go find your show and your book?
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate you giving me the time to speak to your listeners and have some conversations, man. I love the exchanging of ideas in these conversations.
Yes, I would love to have you back on again, too, and, you know, go over some of this stuff, because you blew my mind. You know, I am such a busy person that I don't get to dig into a lot of the things that I like to talk about. So when I have people on to come on and they've already done the digging, it's takes a lot of work away from me. But it's fucking fun, man. Like, a lot of these stories that are in the Bible, if we would piece them together in the correct way and give them teachings, I think that a lot more people would be interested, because our history is so much better than the things that we're watching on Netflix. So,
yeah, man, I agree. But yeah, man, if you enjoyed the conversation, each week I do a show. I release it Monday at 8 p.m. The show's called Prometheus Lens. If you just search us up on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, anywhere you can consume content, you can find me there. I'm on all the social medias. Once again, just search that up and you can find me. And the book is The Epic of Esau. There's the cover. You got a yoked out guy with a bow on his back because he was the mighty hunter. So, but it's called The Epic of Esau, The Birthright, and Seed War. You can pick this up on Amazon in ebook form for $10, or you can get the paperback version for $20. So yeah, just go over there and check that out on Amazon. It's actually doing well. It's been out for a week now, and I've sold just shy of 100 copies. And
oh, so
it's one of the best, you know, new release lists, and so it's doing really well. I'm proud of it, man. A good old boy like me never wrote a book and barely finished 12th grade 20 years ago. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sure there's some typos and some stuff in there. Just overlook that. The thoughts are there, man. The nuggets are there if you can look over some typos and stuff. So.
Man, I think that is so awesome. There's been so many topics that I've wanted to write a book about, and I'm not that person. And you obviously convinced yourself that you are that person somehow, and you made it happen. And what a great topic to choose to dive into and to do. So I would love to get a copy of that book. So I'll go over to Amazon and check that out. Everybody, nice, right now, I'm gonna live link that right now. So anybody that's interested in that book, I'll have the Amazon link right there so that you can go and check that out and get your own copy. Doc, man, you came, you crushed, and you blew my mind. So I definitely want to have you back on and further these conversations with you. And thanks, man. It's been awesome. Oh yeah, my mouse is dead. and I'm going to end this the way that I always do, everybody. Keep digging down those rabbit holes.
Why Rabbit Podcast takes the lies away.